Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
There are two things I agree with Hillary Clinton on. First of all, we're both Yankee fans. Well, wait a second. I became a Yankee fan growing up in New York.
All right, Rudy. Rudy, you're not at the Waldorf Astoria. We don't care about who you root for. Next case. Go ahead.
The Iranian regime needs to know that if it stays on its present course, the international community is prepared to impose serious consequences. The United States joins other nations in sending a clear message. We will not allow Iran to have a nuclear weapon.
See, now, the rubber meets the road, so to speak, for Dick Cheney and President Bush, despite my misgivings with some of their policies. The fact of the matter is they're facing a problem that we're all facing, which is the Hitler of our time. And there's no question in my mind that we're going to see a military move against the psychopath before he gets the nuclear capacity to deter any such move. That's if he doesn't already have it. And nobody knows if he doesn't already have it. But I want to go to something else. I just wanted to get your attention to show you how facile the presidential debates, so-called, really are and what a waste of time they are. I want to ask you something today. What do you want from me today? Do you want entertainment or do you want the facts? I can do either. I can do both. There are people out there who pose as fact givers who are really nothing more than blarney throwers. And then there are those out there who can very well entertain, but in the midst of the entertainment, disseminate the facts on the important issues of our time. So do you want the facts? And what are the questions? What are the topics that you want me to give you the facts on? Let's start with one. Do you want to hear the facts on Pelosi's Turkey Kurd blunder? And was it intentional because the war in Iraq was suddenly going well? Or do you want the facts on George Bush's open borders policy and why he is doing it? Or do you want the facts on why you are seeing debates years ahead of an election for the first time in American history? Or do you want the facts on the global warming theory? Or are there any other issues of the day that you want to discuss the facts on? At 34 minutes after the hour today, we're going to talk about another fact, which is the selling out of the U.S. Marines by George Bush. As you well know, the Haditha story was invented by the enemy himself after a firefight, carried by Time magazine, picked up by Jack Murtha to advance his career and his pocketbook. And then, of course, we've had Marine after Marine persecuted and prosecuted, and many of them have been exonerated and found innocent. Unfortunately, the commander of these troops, the man who was not even there, Lieutenant Colonel Chassani, has been ordered to a full-scale court-martial on Friday. He's been thrown under George Bush's bus. Now you say, well, why George Bush? Because George Bush is the commander-in-chief. George Bush could have stopped the persecution of the Marines. He could stop it today. Instead of giving out shill gold medals to the survivors of his failed war policy, what he could do is take the noose off the neck of Lieutenant Colonel Chassani and all the others. And at 34 minutes after the hour, we're going to speak with Brian Rooney, who is the lawyer for Colonel Chassani. It's a great tragedy what you're witnessing. You know, when this first started, I played for you portions of a movie done in the 50s called Paths of Glory. Kirk Douglas was in it. Adolphe Monjou was in it. And I told you what, I try to make the point that in wartime, there are men who are trying to advance their careers, mainly the generals. And for an extra star, they would hang six of their own men. They'd see them hang at dawn, even if they're innocent, to put another star on their hat. That's what's going on here with Chassani, as sure as I'm sitting here. I was told that General Mattis would do the right thing. Well, you have to ask yourself, why did General Mattis all of a sudden, after releasing all these other men and saying they're innocent, there was no crime, say, well, now we're going to throw a court-martial at Lieutenant Colonel Chassani? Now, remember, Chassani has five children. He's given 18 years of his life to this country, and this is how we treat him? We treat him like an enemy himself? So what do you want today? Entertainment or the facts? And on what topics do you want the facts? The phone number here is 1-800-449-8255. This is the Savage Nation, of course. And I feel that the country is getting worse every day. Now, I know that that's blasphemy to the How to Win Friends and Influence People crowd in the pseudo-conservative movement. The con men in the pseudo-conservative movement who tell you everything is coming up roses have a real good blarney going. You know, and for an extra 25 a month, you're going to get to see them, I guess, sitting on their throne at home, laughing all the way to the Swiss bank in their Gulfstream. But I don't sell you any back passes. I don't sell you any front passes. I don't sell you any. In fact, I don't throw you any curveballs. They can sell you all of the passes they want. Good luck to them. I guess they're greedy and they need the money. The fact of the matter is we're living in very dangerous times. And the times they are not only are changing, but they're changing for the worse. I got a call over the weekend from a dear friend of mine, a military guy who was in Washington, D.C. for a week to visit an ailing general who was 90 years old. And he called and he said, Michael, what's happened to our country? The streets are filled with people wearing burqas and little children, 3, 4, 5 years old, are covered from head to toe. He said, what's happening to our country? I said, ask your good friend George Bush. He's the one who did it to you. Don't ask me. That's George Bush breaking the hegemony of the white male. What do you think it is? You think I don't know what this is? You think I can't read the tea leaves? Why would he bring in medieval people and throw them into this country? And if you say a word, you go to jail for a hate crime. You figure out what's going on. Over the weekend, I went to a friend's birthday party, a gentleman I've known for many years. I haven't seen him in many years, I'll be honest with you. Wonderful people. And he had a 130th birthday party at the one of the clubs in the city. And I decided to go. I never, you know, I don't go to these things. But I didn't want to miss out on a few of the people who were going to be there, including these good people, the D'Annunzios, Michael and Annette, the nicest people in the world. In fact, Michael ran the San Francisco Republican Party for a number of years. Of course, you know, that's a losing proposition in this sick, demented, depressing city. But, you know, I went. There were 175 of his friends showed up. And he said, Michael, you got to come and see a couple of people I want you to meet. I said, well, who, Michael? He said, there's a 90-year-old man who was in the Battle of the Bulge, who was captured by the Germans and survived the German concentration camp, and he's in great shape. I said, him I got to see. Well, I went there. This guy was 90 years old, smiling, happy. I met another guy who fought in the Korean War, a U.S. Marine, who immediately knew the whole Chassani story, works around the clock to help the U.S. Marines. And I'm going to get together with he and a lot of the other guys to raise money for not only Chassani, whether he is found innocent or guilty. I'm going to do what I can do to raise money for Chassani's family after this is all over, after the government gets through dragging him through the mud and destroying a once great American for political gain. But I met really nice people, and they were mainly Italian-Americans, and all, well, I don't know, meet them all, but they were very conservative. They're the old guard San Francisco, and I got to tell you why I love being there, because this was the San Francisco that was here when I first got here in 1974. These are the people, they and their wives and their mothers and their fathers were in the streets of San Francisco, mixed in with the vermin who now run the city, who were then just boys playing in the bathhouses. But now the vermin are actually running the city, and they're destroying not only the city, but the greatness that was San Francisco. But to be around these guys, many of whose families have been here for a couple of generations, and to feel, well, just feel their love and their warmth, I got to tell you, it was a wonderful experience for me. And I know that there's a pent-up America that is never heard from. Not only in San Francisco, but in America, it's not heard from. Anybody who dares stand up to the status quo, whether it be the obviously the liberal status quo, but I got to go a step further, the phony conservative status quo. Anyone who dares stand up to the phony conservative status quo and call it nothing but blarney is excommunicated and persona non grata, not only in San Francisco, but in America. But I got to remind you of something else. There was a gentleman at my table who will remain unnamed, who was an ex, well, let's say a close friend of Rudolph Giuliani, knows him a long time. And I said to him, if Rudy Giuliani wants to win this election, he has to come on the Savage Nation. He cannot spit in the face of over 20 million people who have voted on my website. 20 million independent voters can't be ignored by Rudy Giuliani. And there aren't enough stories about the Yankees to push him over the finish line, I said to him. I said, he's got to come on this show. You understand that? So that's what I think. Then this is issue of Hillary Clinton. What is this everyone saying she's going to win? I've told you I don't think she can win. And I told you why I don't think she can win. If I have to turn on the radio one more day to another, let's say, shallow conservative who gets up there and says, well, I don't want her to win, but she's going to win because, well, the Republican candidates have blown it so severely, there's no way that they could win. They don't know what they're talking about. She's actually unelectable. And I'm going to tell you, as these days go on, that it's the Republicans' election to lose. They could win if they stop talking about the Yankees, if they stop trying to be nice guys, and if they truly could express conservative views in a meaningful manner, any one of the top three could win. I don't know that they're able to do that, though. The phone number here is 1-800-449-8255. As the time goes on, perhaps not in the next segment, but eventually today, I will tell you why I think Hillary Clinton is unelectable. And we will, of course, and I told you, talk at 34 after the hour with the lawyer for Lieutenant Colonel Chesani, who is being railroaded by George Bush and the U.S. Marine Corps itself, in my opinion. I'll be right back. Right now, if you're a United States Marine listening to this show, every one of you who faces a split-second decision in combat, better think twice before you pull the trigger. It's better you take a bullet in the face than you face a court-martial the day after it. That's what George Bush just did to you. That's what General Mattis just did to you. The fact of the matter is, this is one of the most insane periods in American history, where we have lawyers deeply embedded in the Marine Corps, in the Army, in the Air Force, lawyers, unnamed lawyers, like the ex-KGB, who recommend inquiry into Afghan killings to look at two officers. Lawyer says, who's the lawyer? Nobody knows who the lawyers are. Nobody knows who these Army lawyers who put them there. But we know who General Mattis is. Lieutenant General James Mattis, the commander of Marine Corps Forces Central Command, went against the advice of the investigator who examined the evidence in Corporal Tatum's case and later recommended dismissing all charges. And he said Tatum is going to go ahead with a court-martial. And then he said he's going to go ahead with a court-martial against the former battalion commander, Lieutenant Colonel Jeffrey Chesani. And listen to what they're accusing Chesani of. You're not going to believe this. He will stand trial on charges that include dereliction of duty, the Marine Corps said. This is a heartbreaker for me. Here's a man who's given 18 years of his life. He's been in three wars. And this government has the nerve to say that Lieutenant Colonel Chesani is responsible for dereliction of duty at Haditha, when in fact there was no crime in Haditha. It was an invention of the enemy who was using the left-wing press, in this case Time magazine, to have invented the whole story. It's beyond belief that this could be going on, and that Bush gets away with giving out civilian medals about the war while persecuting our men. Because George Bush is the commander-in-chief. He could end this inquiry, this inquisition, and he could say, it's over. There is no charge. I'm dismissing them all. The buck stops here. Let me face Time magazine. I'll face the LA Times and the New York Times. I will take all the heat for them. They're our heroes. I'll face the press. That's what a commander-in-chief does. That's what I would do if I were in charge here. This never would have happened, by the way. If I had been in charge and this had come up, the Time magazine reporter would have been hunted down by U.S. marshals if he was domestic, by the FBI if he was overseas, and I would have thrown him into Leavenworth and tried him for sedition. That's number one. And number two, if I were in charge, I would have given medals to Lieutenant Colonel Chassani and all the other men for not having killed all the civilians in that town after what they went through, when you consider the fact that all of the fire coming at them was coming from civilian homes. If we had the same generation of weak-willed, greedy men running the military that we have today, in World War II, we would have lost World War II because the men would have been afraid to either drop a bomb or to use a flamethrower in Iwo Jima, for example. The men who used the flamethrowers to flush out the Japanese holdouts in the caves of Iwo Jima, by today's standards, George Bush would try them for war crimes. The men who flew the night bombing missions against the German cities, why don't you disinter them, George, and try their corpses? See if you can take their pensions away 50 years later for having dropped firebombs on Dresden. After all, it probably makes you cry late at night that the beautiful city of Dresden had to burn. Of course, there were manufacturing plants that were making the bullets, bombs, and technological devices that the Germans needed, but don't tell anybody that. Just disinter all the World War II heroes, George, while you're at it, and try them, give them courts-martial for sedition, for having committed war crimes, rather. That's exactly what you're doing to our Marines today. And the reason there's no outcry, the reason I'm one of the only people talking about it, is I don't have an answer for you. I have a new theory now on my show. I have no answer for that. That is my new answer to things, is I have no answer for that. I'm going to start shrugging like my Italian friends. I'm going to use the Italian shrug when you ask me questions. I'm just going to go, who knows? And I'm going to go have a drink, because there's almost no answer for some of the things that are going on today. I can make answers up, but why would a commander-in-chief like George Bush continue to persecute the U.S. Marines when, in fact, any Marine out there right now, any soldier out there right now in Iraq who has to face a split-second decision in combat could face a court-martial the next day. And what that's going to do is make our fighting men pause or hesitate for that blink of an eye, and they're going to get whacked by the enemy. And we just threw the enemy a real advantage. So there it is. Now, we can talk about that, and we will a little bit. I also want to talk about the bigger issue of the Hitler of Iran and what needs to be done immediately. He should have been assassinated when he was in New York. His airplane should have been shot down over the Atlantic by one of our F-16s. We should have killed everybody on that plane. The Iranians would have danced in the streets, and we would have prevented World War III. Take that to the bank.
Savage.
It is the Savage Nation. So the liberal press, the vermin in the liberal press, have pushed George Bush and General Mattis to present a demand for a court-martial against one of our real heroes, and that is Lieutenant Colonel Jeffrey Chassani. They're going to try him on charges of dereliction of duty for the so-called Haditha case, when in fact there is no Haditha case. The case was invented by the enemy after a firefight. It was broadcast by Tim McGurk of Time magazine, in my opinion. It was picked up by Jack Murtha, a greedy, aggressive Democrat congressman who has used it to his advantage. Look where he is today compared to where he was when he was completely unknown. He's gone to the head of the class under Nancy Pelosi simply for burning a few U.S. Marines. So we have a lot of work ahead of us. You know, you could do a lot in talk radio. You could just talk, or you could do something. Now, since I cannot affect the course of human events, I might be able to affect the course of this trial by raising money for Lieutenant Colonel Chassani. So if I can do any good, I'm going to do it here. Right now is the lawyer for Chassani, Brian Rooney, from the Thomas More Law Center. Brian, welcome back on this sad day on the Savage Nation.
Thank you for having me, Dr. Savage. Good to be here.
How did this happen? I mean, let me just set it for the people. Virtually all of the men down the stream were found innocent. They're exonerated. The investigator who examined the evidence in the case recommended dismissing all charges. Isn't that correct?
He did. And in fact, one of the Marines that was just recommended to go to a general court-martial, Lieutenant Colonel Ware, the combat veteran, military judge, lawyer, recommended all charges be dropped against him, and Marine Corps decided to send him to general court-martial as well, along with our client, Lieutenant Colonel Chassani. So the decision-making process here is perplexing, but you know, we have faith that once we get in front of a jury of our peers that we're going to exonerate Colonel Cesani.
Well, let's go to General Mattis. How many stars does he have?
I think he just pinned on his 4-star. He just changed commands, and he's going to another command.
Oh, is that right? He just got another star. Is that after he decided to burn Cesani?
It was the timing's close.
Oh, well, it's interesting because I ran, when this first came up a while ago, the movie Paths of Glory. I don't know if you've ever seen it with Kirk Douglas from the 50s, but it was about the French in World War I, where a general is approached by a higher general who says to him, look, the men are not going out of their trenches and getting killed enough for us. We've got to set an example. We need you to hold a mock trial for 6 of them and hang them to make the men afraid of us so they'll go charge into the German machine guns. So he says, well, I won't do that. So he says to him, well, imagine what you look like with another star on your chest. It's almost as though life is imitating art in this case. It's shocking, but totally understandable if you understand the history of civilization. How do we help Cesani from this horrible set of circumstances? What can we do?
Well, we can keep doing what you and your listeners, the Savin Nation, have done for us. And we began to change the paradigm on the whole Haditha myth. It went from a Haditha massacre to Haditha myth. And even on Friday, we had a Wall Street Journal editorial saying that it was a myth and these men acted appropriately. So people have started to finally realize that, you know, we're trying to crucify these guys for doing their job.
But how can you hold a court-martial against Cesani on charges, of all charges, dereliction of duty? That's one of the grossest insults I've ever seen.
It's a typical military charge when you have nothing else against a guy and you want to try to burn him anyway. And that's unfortunately...
Well, wait a minute. He was a battalion commander. He wasn't even at Haditha. Where was he during this so-called nun event?
He was at his command post when the initial battle took place, directing his...
And they're saying what? He didn't report the so-called massacre fast enough? Is that what they mean by dereliction of duty? All of these armchair fat-behind generals?
He's saying that he didn't report it properly and didn't investigate it properly when all the intelligence we had said that they were going to be attacked that day, and they were attacked that day, and all the intelligence that came afterwards saying that 8 Syrian brothers were killed that day, and it just followed on with what Colonel Cesani believed. This was a legitimate combat action, and that's what these Article 32 hearings have turned out to be. The facts have come out, and you have reported upon them, but sadly many in the mainstream media haven't. But, you know, the Savage Nation understands what happened there, and any Marine that's been in combat or soldier that's been in combat understands when you go in these counterinsurgency house-to-house fighting, it's the hardest kind of fighting in the world, and that's where these al-Qaeda types fight from, behind women and children. And the only way you're
right.
going to have...
Right, and aren't they now going to be laughing because they know that our men are going to hesitate and they can blow their brains out? You know, he who hesitates is lost. I would imagine it's even more true in a combat situation. What about a soldier or a Marine who faces a split-second decision in combat? He's going to hesitate and get killed now, thanks to General Mattis and George Bush. Look, dollars and cents, how much money do you guys need to help this... Cesani go to this court-martial? The government's going to spend any amount to burn him, is that correct? Whatever it takes?
There are reports that they've spent upwards of $43 million in this entire investigation. And
oh, my God in heaven. I don't believe what you just told me. I'm shocked. Somebody is doing this. Somebody is behind all of this. Okay, we can't raise $43 million. How much do you really seriously need to present his side of the story?
Well, your listeners and everybody who's donated thus far helped us get through the process of where we're at now, and that was around $300,000. And we think it's going to be obviously at least that to get us through the trial phase of this, which will probably go sometime in February. So between now and February, we need to raise a lot of money to get the proper experts that we need to go out to California to
oh, my God, it's awful.
Evidence.
Well, here's what I'm going to do. First of all, I'm going to link up the Thomas More Law Center, and we're going to do a special. The money can only go for the Cesani case. That's what I'm going to do. I don't want it in general funds. I'm going to give another $10,000 of my own money right now. I've given $20,000. I'm going to give another $10,000 right now, Brian. That's how much I believe in this particular man and how we have to defend him. And then I'm going to ask my listeners who've given $10 or $50 or $100 to do exactly the same all over again to the Thomas More Law Center, and I guess can they earmark it for the Cesani defense?
They can. They can click a button that says this is specifically for the Chisani defense.
Well, I'm going to make that commitment now, and I'm going to make another commitment later on. I'll make another commitment later on. I'll make another commitment after that, because all I can do is try to help in the only way I know how, A, by getting the message out, and B, by giving some of my own money. I mean, it's easy to talk about these things and laugh about it and move on as though it's just a story. But here's a man. How many years has Chisani given this country as a Marine?
20 years and five times in different climes and places, as far as Panama, Persian Gulf, three times in Iraq, Second Battle of Fallujah. This guy's dedicated.
And he's being charged with dereliction of duty by these cowardly phonies sitting on their fat behind smoking cigars and golfing at Camp Pendleton. It's sickening.
If you go back from where we started with Time magazine, where they said we pulled out 24 civilians, women and children, and put them on their knees in the street and fired bullets in the back of your head, to where we're at today, where Lance Corporal Tatum, Colonel Chisani, charged with negligent homicide, meaning they didn't act properly, didn't use the due care necessary when they were killing people. It's absurd.
Why don't we do this? Mr. Rooney, I know you're focused on defending Chisani. Why can't we, the people, find a way to prosecute Tim McGurk of Time magazine, who fabricated this entire story, in my estimation? Why can't he be brought up on charges?
That's a good question. Our focus after we exonerate Colonel Chisani is going to be on Congressman Murtha. We're going to sue him for looking to sue him for libel and slander in his role in this, in regards to Colonel Chisani saying that he covered up a massacre, when every investigation that says all the way up the chain of command there was no cover-up. So we're definitely going to be looking at that once this is done.
All right. Colonel Chisani has five children. Is that correct?
Five and one on the way.
Five and one on the way. He's given 20 years to the United States of America, and George Bush is rewarding him with a knife in his back. Well, we got to help him. It's we the people right now versus the U.S. government. It's not just Chisani versus the U.S. government. What they're doing is they're taking on all of America. I predict, by the way, this is going to backfire and embarrass the Bush administration worse than anything they've ever done to anybody, because Chisani is innocent, number one, of charges. Do you have a chance to win his freedom here or not? I mean, is there a chance, or do you think that they've already made up their minds and they're going to stock it with people who are also going to be given an extra star and maybe a contracting job if they burn him?
Well, I believe in the military justice system, and I can, as a former Marine, I can't believe that the jury that we put in there will crucify somebody just for the good of the so-called Marine Corps. I can't imagine that they would do that to a fellow Marine. Semper Fi has to mean something. And to me and every other Marine out there, a former Marine or former service member, it means always faithful, and that means you do the right thing to your fellow Marine. And the right thing for Colonel Chisani is to find him, you know, innocent.
Well, you know, the most shocking thing I've learned from you today, Mr. Rooney, is that my instincts never fail me, and that when I learned today that General Mattis just received another star and went and has left for a larger command, I said, the fix is in. It's right out of Paths of Glory. Somebody, though, is pulling the strings on this. Somebody wants Chisani to fall. Who do you suspect is behind this persecution?
I don't know. I do know that, you know, they've cut the chain at Colonel Chisani. He, when he reported up what happened that day on November 19th, 2 years ago, almost to the day, he told his regimental commanding officer, his commanding general of the division, and that went all the way up to General Casey, who is now the chief of staff of the Army. He knew exactly what happened in Haditha that day from what we were told from General Huck, the division CG, and none of those guys have been criminally charged with anything. It's only Colonel Chisani. They're trying to keep it seems like, at the lowest level, at the highest rank.
Well, this is a classic case of somebody up there hates him. But it's not Chisani who they're after. They want somebody to throw to the wolves, and the wolves in this case are the liberal vermin in the press. Look at the headlines I have here. This is from the New York Times on Sunday. It says, no charges have been filed in the deaths of at least a dozen civilians in March by Paul von Zillbauer, a man who is probably wears the pens if he hears a car backfire. The press is screaming that charges be filed in case after case in Iraq after a firefight. And I guess that even if the evidence proves that they're innocent of these charges of atrocities, somebody has to be thrown underneath the wheels of the Bush bus. And in this case, it was Chesani. Is it because he has no political juice, no political power? Why him?
Well, obviously, he doesn't have any, you know, political power or juice, or that's why he's come to the Thomas More Law Center, because he has no money either. He's dedicated his life to the service of his country, and now his government right now has turned its back on him. You know, this went from being, you know, this the modern-day Vietnam My Lai to, you know, much ado about nothing, and yet we're still moving this forward for what? To placate anti-war politicians and the anti-war left in the media that think that somebody needs to be scapegoated in this? It's insane.
Well, here's what I'm going to do. I'm giving $10,000. We'll send it out this week. Personal funds, no one else's funds. I'm going to ask all the listeners who gave money to give all over the same amount, at least to start again. And believe me, I'll rapidly escalate the amount of money I'm giving to a much higher amount in a very near future. But I'm going to make another commitment on the show right now because, you know, Brian, I can hear your voice and you sound somewhat defeated here. I hear it in you. You're going to fight. I know that. You're an ex-Marine. But I can hear that you're a little down in the dumps. I would be too. It's heartbreaking, really, isn't it?
Well, I'm disappointed in the Marine Corps, but I still love the Marine Corps, and that's why I have hope in the process. But, you know, there's a saying that faith can move mountains, but I always say you better bring your shovels, and we're bringing our shovels.
Well, we're going to bring the shovels of the millions of listeners of the Savage Nation, many of whom have plenty of money, and they don't know what to do with it. And instead of giving it to the Republican Party, I suggest that the next time you want to send the Republican Party $10, send them nothing, and send the $100 to the Chesani Defense Fund. How do they do that? Who do they send the money to?
You just go to our website at thomasmore, more spelled with one O, .org, and you can go online and donate online, or you can print out a sheet to send in a mailer and mail it in. That's the easiest way to do it.
Well, we'll link it up on michaelsavage.com. I get over 100,000 a day that go on it, and I'll continue to hammer it. And I want people to understand I don't take a nickel of any of this. I don't make a dime off any of the donations. I don't want to see a dime of the money. I want it to go right to the Moore Law Center. I don't want to handle it. I don't want to touch it. I don't want anything to do with the money. I want it to go to his defense. But here's the other commitment I want to make today, Mr. Rooney, which is when this is all over, win, lose, or draw, he has six children who are going to need to be helped because the government is going to strip him of his pension as sure as I'm sitting here. If he's found guilty, and let's say they say, well, we don't really want him to go to jail, but we got to do something, you know, to make the guys at Time Magazine and New York Times feel good. So what we'll do is we'll give him 3 months and we'll throw him out of the Marine Corps and strip him of his pension. That's going to devastate him financially, isn't it not?
Exactly. He's got 20 years in. He's vested right now if he was to retire like he was planning on doing and to live off of that pension with his children for the rest of his life. And if that's gone, you know, he's in his late 40s now. He's trained as a warrior. You know, what does someone like that do once, you know, the government's turned their back on him?
Where does he live? What state is the family residing in?
They live in California.
Well, I'd hire him, number one. I'd hire him for the same amount of money, if not more, as his pension gave him to be. We'll work that out, I'm telling you. Or I'm going to do a giant fundraiser for him. Free of charge to me. I'll raise as much money as I can. But look, we're going to do everything we can to fight the power of this big government that is coming down and trying to crush this patriot and this good man. Make no mistake about it. It's the people versus the Bush administration, because we can't blame anybody else. George Bush is the commander in chief. Doesn't he have the power to wipe this away? Couldn't he say this is ridiculous and it's not going to happen? Couldn't he stop it?
He could. He could. And so could many people in the chain of command, anybody above the current commanding general on up to the Secretary of the Navy, Secretary of Defense, they could all stop it.
Well, I guess there would be no contracting job waiting, and God only knows, they may be looking for a job in the Democrat administration that's coming, and in order to get that job, they got to burn a few good men. All right, Thomas More Law Center, we're going to help Chesani. The fight is just beginning. It's not over. We didn't win round one, but we're going to win this battle. I'll be right back. Thanks for being with us, Brian Rooney.
There are two things I agree with Hillary Clinton on. First of all, we're both Yankee fans.
Yes, it's the Jack Benny Show starring Rudy Giuliani. See nothing about Chassani. It's all about jokes for the average moron. Just keep them laughing. Well, the important thing is that you become president. That's the important thing. After all, what could be more important than being president? It doesn't matter if an innocent man is persecuted like this. The important thing is that you become president. So I'm a little upset over it. I'm not really, you know, break down in tears over it, but it's getting me very upset because it could be you in your own. You know what I mean? Like this Chassani case is a macro of what goes on in so many people's lives, whether you're in the military or not. It's an innocent man being persecuted. You want to go back to the Jesus case? There's the Jesus case. You want to go back to the monotype of this whole thing, the prototype, rather? The prototype of this case is Jesus being put on a cross for political reasons. Chassani is being crucified by George Bush for political reasons. May as well be for 20 pieces of gold, as far as I can tell. It's sickening. But, you know, if you read Billy Budd by Herman Melville or you look at any other case of misjustice, they're all the same. An innocent man, no matter how innocent he may be, once the forces line up against him, they're going to crucify him. And this is that case, and that's why it means so much to me. So I just sent an email to my office to send that amount of money that I mentioned, which is a pittance, I realize. But it's really not a pittance in another way. You know, the median salary in America is $25,000 a year. I don't think you understand that. There was an article on one of the websites today on $25 an hour jobs. You know, we in the media, especially in the national level, are very disconnected from reality. Let me tell you, many of us don't even know what the average person makes. A lot of us, you know, pretend to be the average person, or they make believe they're the average person. But the fact of the matter is, you say, well, $25 an hour may not sound like much until you realize that the median household salary is $46,000 a year, according to the 05 U.S. Census Bureau. And that breaks down to about $22.27 an hour for a 40-hour week. So if I donate $10,000 today, that's 1/4 of the average median salary. But believe me, by the end of this year, it will become closer to the whole annual median salary for this particular case. So it's not a pittance.
Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Like me to suggest what you can do with that promotion.
Colonel Dax, you will apologize at once or I shall be placed under arrest.
I apologize for not being entirely honest with you. I apologize for not revealing my true feelings. I apologize, sir, for not telling you sooner that you're a degenerate, sadistic old man. And you can go to hell before I apologize to you now or ever again.
Since the publication of the book 25 years ago, no one dared to make this movie. It was too shocking, too frank.
Sort of casualties you anticipate, sir?
Say 5% killed by our own barrage. It's a very generous allowance. 10% more in getting through no man's land, and 20% more getting through the wire. That leaves 65%, with the worst part of the job over. Let's say another 25% in actually taking the anthill. We're still left with a force more than adequate to hold it.
You know, you're saying that more than half of my men will be killed.
Aside from the inescapable fact that a good many of your men never left the trenches, there's the question of the troops' morale. Don't forget that.
The troops' morale?
Certainly. These executions will be a perfect tonic for the entire division. There are few things more fundamentally encouraging and stimulating than seeing someone else die.
Fire in heaven's name, are they? Fire in heaven! They're not advancing.
ignoble cowards. They're not advancing. The barrage is getting away from them. They're still in the trenches.
Captain Nichols.
Yes, sir?
Order 75 to commence firing on our own position.
Well, there it is. It's chilling when you consider the fact that history is repeating itself. In this case, life is imitating art. But then again, that piece of art imitated the life of World War I and perhaps every other war in history. But here we have paths of glory all over again in the Haditha case, where Lieutenant Colonel Chassani is the innocent victim who was being persecuted by the men above him because they just got an extra star on their uniform. Don't say it didn't happen, because I'll tell you, in my opinion, it's exactly what happened. I woke up this morning when I read this. I said, you know what? I suspect that the great General Mattis, who we all told was a great Marine, a great combat veteran, is never going to do the wrong thing. Well, he didn't do the wrong thing with the guys below him. But now all of a sudden he's recommending a court-martial for this hero, Chassani, including dereliction of duty as a charge. And I learned today during the last hour that, bingo, he was given another star and he moved on to another command. Now, I'm not accusing the good general of having done this for political reasons. I would never do that, as you well know. I'm not that kind of guy. I don't rush to judgment. But you know something? I saw the movie Paths of Glory, and it got me sick when I watched it to see what went on in World War I in that fictional story. But this is getting me even sicker, because here's a man, Chassani, who's given this country 20 years of his life. He's fought in four or five wars. And it doesn't matter to these old bums sitting up there in their fat behinds, those gold bricks, looking for their retirement and a little contracting job. This is a scandal of the highest order. And I am going to use my microphone. I'm going to use this megaphone, and I'm going to talk from the highest mountain in this land that I could find until Chassani is found innocent and until the guilty pay for this crime. And the guilty are Time Magazine. And the guilty are the Democrat Party. And they're going to pay for doing this to him. Now, I gave $10,000 of my own money. I know it's not a lot of money for you liberals out there. I know you spend more for a bottle of wine. But it's the best I can do right now. I realize you spend more flying from Tennessee to California to talk about global warming than I just gave Chassani, Mr. Gore. I know it's not a lot of money. Why, your airfare is $7,000 an hour. I know the cost of chartering a private jet. I understand it runs about $6,500 to $7,000 an hour. And I know $10,000 is just a flight for you from one coast to the other. It's not a lot of money, is it, Al? But it's a lot of money today. And tomorrow it may be more. And I'm looking in right now to making that number much higher. WOR, Paula, you're on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Okay. Yes, Michael, it's a pleasure. I just want to call up and say I'm sitting here. I'm sick to death. My heart is beating fast. My ears are red. I feel like something has to be done. Now, what I suggest is a good old-fashioned sick-out countrywide. Everybody that cares.
Well, hold. No, please, please, ma'am. A sick-out's going to do nothing. The only thing that's going to help is cash on the barrelhead. The man is going to court. The government, we heard, has spent $23 million to try to burn a few good Marines. And thus far, they failed. So I've got to raise at least $500,000 for him. Let's stop with the going in circles. I know your heart's in the right place. I've given a little bit today, and I want you to give a little bit today and tomorrow and the next day, and that's all there is to it. You got to watch Paths of Glory or go read the book. I have a hardcover copy in my hands right now. I ordered two copies. I remember when I did this the first time around. But it's all about this story. It's all about this story. What is the story? Tell me what this story really is. It's a story of an individual who is facing persecution in the U.S. Marines because they need to throw somebody to the wolves. Now, the wolves in this case are the liberals in the press and the Iraqis themselves, by the way. The Iraqis themselves are the most corrupt people on the planet. The Iraqi politicians perhaps are the most corrupt people on the planet. And they are trying to placate the poor Iraqis whose lives have been wrecked by burning a U.S. Marine. That's what's really going on here, you know. I'll take your calls. Adam on WOR, what do you think? Go ahead. You're on the Savage Nation.
Hello, Mike. You're right. You know, there is I'm a reservist, Army reservist. I was in Iraq and Kuwait. And there are a lot of higher-ups do their gold bricking, and it does anger me. I'm actually angry at the Democrats, who just seem to, like, these higher-ranking generals seem to placate to these Democrats who hate military in the first place. It's like, you know, they don't get it that these Muslim terrorists want to blow up a bomb in New York, a nuclear bomb, and these liberals don't get it, and these higher generals would rather answer to the liberals than to the president. It just kind of bothers me.
Yeah, but the president is the ultimate person here. He is the commander-in-chief. He could have stopped this persecution of the Marines a year ago, 2 years ago. He could stop it today. So you can't blame the liberals or the Democrats anymore. It's George Bush who's the commander-in-chief. He could say this is crap and end it now. Thanks for the call. Now we got a bigger story. This is a big story from the point of view of a human being who's being unfairly prosecuted and persecuted. The biggest political story of this year is Nancy Pelosi and that fraud from Palo Alto, California, that self-righteous phony whose name I keep forgetting. I don't know why I forget his name. It's because he uses the Holocaust for personal gain. Anyone who uses a human tragedy of the dimensions of the Holocaust in order to get over on others makes me doubly angry. Tom Lantos, in my opinion, wins the prize for somebody who uses the Holocaust and has used the Holocaust against the Jews for his own personal gain. And it makes me want to puke. But here's a man who says that the reason he was going to push forth this condemnation of Turkey over the Armenian genocide 100 years ago is because he, of all people, is the conscience of the Senate, basically, conscience of the Congress. Well, let's see what happened as a result of this housewife from Baltimore and her meddling in international affairs, an area she knows nothing about. This nice housewife from Baltimore named Nancy Pelosi says to Lantos, well, I guess it's a good idea. I'm a liberal, and this seems like a good liberal idea to press forward with a resolution against Turkey. So cooler minds would have said, now, wait a minute. Nancy Pelosi, don't you understand what's going to happen if you do this? No, but they didn't think this through, period. Or did they? Question mark. I suspect they did, and I think they did this on purpose, and I don't think this was a blunder, and I'm the first to tell you this last Monday. Sure, I was picked up by the golfer on Tuesday, because he doesn't have any original ideas, but I don't really care who picked it up. I'm going to tell you again what happened here. The deaths in Iraq are down. We are slowly winning the peace in Iraq. The Democrats' worst nightmare is that peace should reign in Iraq come this summer, because that's the end of Hillary Clinton's campaign. Her entire modus operandi is to get us out of Iraq because it's a failure. Well, what if it turns out that by this summer it's a success? Well, her campaign goes up in smoke, doesn't it? So what do they have to do? They have to make sure it's a failure. How do they make it a failure? Make it a failure? Well, there's a number of ways. One is to provoke Turkey into attacking the Kurds in northern Iraq and to open up another front for the U.S. for our U.S. troops. In other words, a place for them to fight, have to fight another battle, which is in or even keep the peace in northern Iraq. Remember, Kurdistan, or this piece of Kurdistan, is in northern Iraq. I think the Democrats did this on purpose. That's my position as of right now, until they prove otherwise. And I want to know how Nancy Pelosi gets away with this. Answer, because she owns the people in the newspaper business who are all on her side. They will never report anything salacious or nasty that any of the Democrats do. Denver, Colorado, Anson, go ahead, please.
Yes, question. What do the Kurds have to gain from provoking Turkey to attack them?
It's a great question. But as you well know, there was a brazen ambush by Kurdish militants that killed 12 Turkish soldiers. They took prisoners over the weekend. It was an ambush by a large group of Kurds about 3 miles from the border with Iraq early on Sunday. It is a direct provocation on the part of the Kurds. And why do you suppose they did it is what you're asking me, right? What do they have to gain?
Right.
Okay, I'm going to answer it to you right now. Nobody in the media has said this yet. You're going to wake up and find out this week that Iran is working with the Kurds to do this. We learned this morning that Iran, the agent provocateur of the entire Middle East, is lining up with the Armenians in this case. Did you know that?
No.
Did you hear any of that? Iran is suddenly cozying up to the Armenians in the region called Armenia, which, by the way, is, as far as I remember, my geography right now, part of Turkey. And so the Iranians are now trying to provoke the Armenians into some kind of action against the Turks. What Iran is doing here is trying to provoke any civil action that they can provoke in the area to start as many fires as they can that America has to put out. That's what's going on here. And I can guarantee you that weapons and intelligence has come from the Iranians to the Kurds in order to make this provocation. It was the Iranians behind the Kurds to do this right now. And with little help from Nancy Pelosi and Tom Lantos, we have a bonfire in the brewing here, Anson. Thank you for the call. I don't expect you to say thank you, sir, or you're a genius. That's my opinion, because the gentleman asked a great question. Why would the Kurds, what do they have to gain by setting off a war with Turkey right now? After all, the outlawed Kurdistan Workers Party, or PKK, did this raid, the killing of 12 Turkish soldiers in an ambush, came 4 days after Turkey's parliament approved contingency plans for military retaliation across the border. Now, such action by Turkey would be in an area of Iraq that is under the control of the United States military. Do you understand that? And do you realize that a Turkish advance into northern Iraq would suddenly bring the United States into the position where we have to divert troops to that front in order to keep the peace? This is an unbelievable nightmare. And I am certain, as sure as I see, let's put it to you this way, since I can't prove or disprove what I just said about Iran. If I were an Army intelligence officer, or I was an intelligence person working for the CIA, I can guarantee you my position paper tonight would be about Iran. Is Iran behind the Kurdish incursion against the Turkish troops? And I would try to verify that with some serious study. I'll be right back. Savage.
Turkish military strikes in the only relatively stable region of Iraq. But Turkish Prime Minister Tayyip Erdogan, speaking ahead of a 2-day visit to Britain, says Washington will have to act quickly against the rebels.
They told us they are really disturbed, and we said that if you take steps swiftly, this will help our strategic partnership.
All right, we're talking about Nancy Pelosi and Tom Lantos's triggering of this new front in the Iraq war, which is the Kurds provoking Turkey into a military action. Now, the Democrats, if they did this on purpose, and I have no reason to believe that they wouldn't, have also pushed global oil prices to record highs because the guerrillas, the Kurdish guerrillas, have warned that they may target pipelines carrying Iraqi and Caspian crude across Turkey. So, in other words, they get a twofer. Just think of what Lantos and Pelosi can get out of this. Not only do they increase violence in Iraq, not only do they make George Bush's and the military fight another front, but look at this. They get to destabilize the U.S. and the world economy at the same time. Now, what could be better? What could be better? You get a twofer out of one thing like this without firing a shot. Isn't that terrific? Now, that's what you call a smart man, that Lantos. You got to hear it. You know why Lantos is particularly smart? Because he has more of a conscience than anybody in the world. Never mind the U.S. Congress. He has a bigger conscience than anybody in the world. And since he has a bigger conscience than anybody in the world, since he survived the Holocaust, why, he could set off another Holocaust and it wouldn't matter. He's justified in doing so. Boise, Idaho. Aaron, you're on the Savage Nation.
Dr. Savage, I am outraged at what the Democrats have done. You're the only one reporting the story. I can't find it on CNN. They're all talking about global warming and forest fires. The Democrats, as you have said, are red diaper doper babies. But this is seditious what they're doing. I listened to your CD last night, and you read the Sedition Act in 2003, that if anybody says or does anything against the military, like what they're doing against our Marines,
it's unbelievable to me. It's unbelievable to me how even some of the conservative media is not talking about the Kurdish Turkey thing and how it was provoked by the Democrats on purpose, or may have been provoked on purpose, or should be analyzed as to whether it's being provoked on had been provoked on purpose instead of being dismissed as just crackpot right wing talk. How do we know they didn't plan this? How do we know that Pelosi and her gang and Hillary Clinton didn't say that's a dandy idea, we could destabilize the war, there's not enough violence over there right now? How do we know they didn't do that? Why shouldn't we assume they did that? Well, I'm telling you, this is the worst thing I've ever seen. And also, the global oil prices are shooting up because the wonderful Kurds have said they may target pipelines carrying Iraqi and Caspian crude across Turkey. Has anyone reported that to you? I kind of doubt it. Instead, you're hearing about Arnold Schwarzenegger, the strudel man, congratulating himself for doing nothing about the wildfires.
Savage.
So we're talking about very serious political events. We're talking about the Kurds provoking Turkey and what's behind it. And the Democrats do this on purpose with the Armenia resolution. I'm raising money for Lieutenant Colonel Chassani. It's talk radio at its best. Right now, I have a real treat for you. Years ago, there was a man on television who was an icon named Johnny Carson. And the man who was associated with Johnny Carson, intimately associated, when you say Johnny Carson, you think Ed McMahon. Well, Ed McMahon was around when television was young, and he joins us right now on the Savage Nation with his new book by the same title, When Television Was Young. Ed McMahon, a real pleasure to have you on the Savage Nation. Welcome.
Nice to talk with you. Thank you.
Well, so you have come out with a new book about the early days of television, and I understand you make parallels between what went on in those days and what's going on today, but it's not between television today. It's about radio today. Isn't that what you're stating?
Well, a lot of things are duplicated. You know, that old Broadway song, "Everything Old is New Again." You can almost find everything that is happening in broadcasting as a route way back to the very beginning of television. Mm-hmm. It's hard to believe, Michael, that there was a time when there was no television.
Yeah. Well, I actually was born before television, 1948, 49. I was a little kid, but I remember the first few TVs, they had magnifying glasses on the front, Ed, in our little apartment in the Bronx. It was a miracle to sit there with that big glass in front of it. I'm sure you can laugh when you think about it. So when you worked with Johnny Carson, wasn't there a big connection between politicians and television in those days?
You know, it became a thing where you had to get on Johnny Carson's show if you're running for anything. That was a perfect platform to go to.
So wouldn't you say that that exists today with David Letterman and Jay Leno, or would you say that that there's a little difference between them and Johnny in some way?
You've got to drop by and see the boys.
Mm-hmm. Well, who are the boys, though? I mean, who is the Johnny Carson of today?
You know, it's like a mandatory thing now. If you're on the campaign trail, you got to stop in and see them and let the audience see you in a very relaxed, non-political kind of
But wait, but see who? See who?
See anybody who's running for any office.
Right, but they have to see who? Who do they have to see? Who must they see?
Letterman.
Only Letterman. So in your opinion, talk radio doesn't have a role to play, or it does?
Sure, I'm not saying anything about talk radio. I'm talking about television. You know, you always have your place in talk radio. But I think that a lot of people want to see their candidate on the air fending the questions of a Letterman or a Leno and looking charming, looking, you know, very pleasant, looking nice, instead of an automatic thing where they're doing a speech or they're doing something.
But why would people care what a comedian has to say to a candidate in times such as ours, which are so serious? What would they care whether a comedian asks them a set-up question, is how I look at it.
Somebody that they can care about. Somebody they can care about in the White House. They want someone that they can get involved with. And if you see
I don't actually agree that television is as important as it once was. I think that there are other venues that are far more important. Look at the debates that are going on today. And the attendance, by the way, the audience for these debates is very low. Incidentally, I don't think people care as much as they once did. There may be overexposure.
Possibly, but I think there's got to be exposure. They've got to see these people.
Mm-hmm. Well, as they said about children in my day, you should be seen and not heard. Today, I think the reverse is true. Maybe they should be heard and not seen, some of them. Ed McMahon, when television was young, thanks very much for being with us on the Savage Nation. Right now, I think television is quite old, and it's in its senescence, as far as I'm concerned. It's in its rickety old age, and the new media is far more important than television, I think, than it once was. In those days, there was only television. So there it is. Let's go back to the stories of the day. Los Angeles, Dan on KLAA. Dan, what's on your mind? Go ahead, please.
Yes, Sergeant 101st Airborne here. I'm 100% disabled and retired. And I'm going to whatever I can. I'm going to go look through my finances, and whatever I can afford to send to Dasani, I'm going to do it.
And let me explain something. I don't want people who are struggling themselves, as you are, to hurt yourself. There are plenty of people who listen to this show who are rolling in money, and they're greedy and they're selfish. And instead of giving money to the Republican Party, they can give it to Dasani. You know, send a few bucks, Dan. Send $25. Don't send any more. I don't want you to hurt yourself. You're living on a small amount of money. Disability, right?
Yes.
Well, let me give it for you, Dan. Let me give it for you. Send $25 for your own reasons, but don't send any more. I don't want you doing that. I don't want you hurting yourself, Dan. And I say that to everyone else who feels as strongly as I do about it. Let me send the money for you, or let some of the rich cats listening to the show do it. You know, they got plenty of money to spend on themselves. Instead of one more trip to Provence or an $800 bottle of wine the next time they go out, or a $1,200 box of cigars, they can send it to Chassani's Defense Fund. And we put it up on michaelsavage.com. In fact, I want to go to it right now on my own website, michaelsavage.com. Incidentally, while I'm looking to download it, we ordered another shipment of the Best of Savage Nation DVD so that those of you who are ordering the pre-holiday sale, which ends in only a few days now, where you get the Healing Children Naturally, the Reducing the Risk, and the Savage DVD for a very reasonable price, which is packaged so you can send it out as a gift for the holidays. They should be there very soon, the DVDs. We ordered them, and they should be there any day. Let me see if it's up. I think it is here. Helps Savage stop the betrayal of Colonel Chassani and the Haditha Marines. Click here. And when you click on the bottom of michaelsavage.com, bingo, it goes right to the Thomas More Law Center. And then you could go and says donate, and you go from there. I don't get a dime of it. I don't want it. I don't want anyone saying, well, he's making 4% or 3%. I'm making 0%. I don't want one dime of the money that goes to him. I don't want any handling charges. Look, I know what I could do. I could set up a fund. I could set up a receiver here on my website, and I could then send it on. I don't want to touch the money. How's that? That's so you know that every nickel's going to his defense fund. I don't want anything to do with it. I don't want 1%. I don't want 0.1%. Zero. How's that? So all of my detractors will have nothing to say. Not one dime, okay? And I want to just shut their traps already. Those liberal vermin, they're killing all of us, those rat bums. Thank God I have no power in this country. There'd be nooses hanging from New York to Los Angeles for the liberals and the media. There'd be nooses on every overpass. I'm going nuts from them, what they're doing. It's not bad enough that they're killing us, killing our families, killing the church, killing the father, killing the mother, killing the flag, killing the school. But now they're killing our Marines. Portland, Oregon. Elsa, you're on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Yes, Michael. I'm one of your ardent Savage Ed listeners. And I just want to add to what you've been talking about Colonel Chassani. And I think that there's something more to it, like you said. And one of it, I think that it's they want to shrink the military, and this is one way of discouraging people to enlist. So I don't know.
I don't know if this is the direct reason, but I do know this. Every young Marine and soldier in Iraq who faces a split-second decision in combat is now going to hesitate, and that hesitation is liable to get them injured or killed. And we can thank the liberals for this. Thank you, Elsa. 1-800-449-8255, phone number. Robert, Hartford, Connecticut, you're next up. Go ahead, please.
Hi, Mike. How are you doing? I was just listening to your conversation with Ed McMahon, a man of few words, and I have to disagree with him because I'm a 55-year-old guy. I probably started listening to talk radio about 5 years ago. I really kind of being more conscious of what I was, you know, listening to in terms of opinions and sides. And I don't watch TV anymore, and I say people are listening more and watching less.
I don't think that going before David Letterman or Jay Leno really matters very much to the average voter. They know they're comedians who have scripts. They also know they're not committed to doing anything for anybody except making them laugh. The action today is right here in your radio. That's where most of the action's taking place right now. And I believe that the independent voter, number one, is going to determine the next president. And since the independent voter is going to determine it, and since I have the largest audience of independent voters, I am telling you that anyone who wants to be president has to come on this show. Now, whether they do or not is up to them. But if they are going to continue to avoid talking to the Savage Nation and answering questions that are so important to you about the illegal immigration crisis, about the global warming fantasy, about the Iraq war, you name the subject, if they're not willing to come before the Savage Nation and answer the people straight on, my guess is that millions of Americans who are registered to vote, particularly the independents, and especially the conservative wing of the Republican Party, they're not going to vote. You're liable to have the lowest turnout in history, not overall, but on the Republican and independent side, you're going to have one of the lowest turnouts in history. That's how it's going to play out. That is unless they come before and meet the Savage Nation. That's my opinion. It's one man's opinion, and I cannot control what other people do. You understand that? Okay, so here we go. Back to the callers. Salt Lake City, Utah. Sean, go ahead, please.
Hi, Dr. Savage. I appreciate your the way that you answer questions, just straight to the point. You were talking about the Turkish problem up north in Iraq. Why is it you think that we aren't just going up there and stopping any conflict from going across the border as the United States still have control of that country? Or do you think that...
Wait, you're saying why has our military not gone into that border area to stop this?
Yeah, exactly. Like, why allow it to even take place?
Well, the answer is very simple. Our troops are stretched thin already. They've just about gotten Baghdad under control. The killings, if you've noticed, have gone down. So now all of a sudden Pelosi and her group there open up another front in order to destabilize the country and to provoke more mayhem in Iraq? Is that not a possible theory?
I think it absolutely is, and it really frustrates me that our own country, our citizens, our people, politicians in our own country would sell out. I mean, just
well, here's an interesting thing. I was reading one of the websites this morning, a journalist, and they interviewed a professor who was at one of the think tanks, like the liberal Brookings Institute, very liberal, and he said some conservative commentators are suggesting the Democrats provoke Turkey on purpose in order to open up another front in the war. Of course, they were talking about me because I came up with it 4 days before the Gulf or gas bag did. But let's forget who came up with it first. You know who comes up with the ideas first. The fact of the matter is they then interview a professor who says that if this is true, he would be astonished to believe that could go on. Well, let me tell you something. I'm not astonished to believe that the Democrats are not capable of that kind of behavior. You've got more money and more power at stake than ever before in American history. And if one party is allegedly willing to go into war to maintain power, why should you assume that the other party is not willing to also provoke a small war for their own political gains? I'll be right back.
Savage.
1,000 Kurdish Workers' Party guerrillas are based across the border in Iraq. They're blamed for a recent wave of deadly attacks against its troops, Turkey's worst losses in a decade. Ankara reckons U.S. forces could capture the guerrillas' leaders, shut down their camps, and cut their supply routes if they wanted. Washington isn't keen, not least because the regional authority may see such action as the U.S. siding with Turkey against Kurds. The
Let's
growing
pause
crisis
right there. So Pelosi and Lantos have either committed one of the greatest political blunders of our time, or if you are given to Machiavellian politics and believe that there is evil in all men's hearts, particularly in the hearts of politicians, if you can say they have any, then you could easily conclude that this was done on purpose. Okay? You decide. You know, you decide what you think really went on here, but it doesn't matter what went on. Things were a little more stable in Iraq. The number of deaths were down, roadside bombs were down, oil was starting to flow. Nightmare for the Democrats. The worst thing for the Democrats would be peace to break out across the Middle East by next summer. The worst thing, the worst nightmare for the Clinton machine. So what you do is you stir the pot. If you can come up, make believe you're doing it for humanitarian reasons, like for something that happened to the poor Armenian people 100 years ago, well, it's even better. You get a twofer. You look like you're a bleeding heart liberal, and you provoke an action against George Bush and the Republican Party and the U.S. military. Now, what could be better? Machiavelli himself would be proud of that particular maneuver. You know, you understand that? At least that's one man's analysis. Whether it's true or not, I'll let you decide. And even if it is, what are you going to do about it? You hear about the – I see bumper stickers, impeach Bush. Can't you impeach a House Speaker? Can't you impeach a House Speaker for being either ignorant or worse? Why isn't there an impeach Pelosi movement, I wonder, after this particular action? Answer, because she owns the press. You don't even read this story, by the way. It's not even in the newspapers. Yes, you'll see the Turkish-Kurdish story. But do you see the connection between what triggered this? Do you see it was the Armenia Holocaust resolution put forward by Pelosi and Lantos? Never. They always cover for their friends. They get by with a little help from their friends, just as they once probably got high with a little help from their friends. That's the 60s, isn't it? Isn't that the adage of the Beatles song? I get by with a little help from my friends. I get high with a little help from my friends. Well, guess what? The times are not changing that much. Things are still going on the same way. All right, callers now. KNEW, San Francisco. Nathan, you're on the Savage Nation. Topic, please.
Yeah, Michael. Thanks for taking my call. I just wanted to give you my point of view on why I think people want to hear a comedian interview a potential candidate for presidency. And I think, you know, they just want to hear a different perspective. They know that they're going to get the same kind of canned questions from your typical news interviewers and stuff, and they want to hear something from some type of person that's more from the, I guess, normal, mainstream, streamlined type of person you'd find on the street or something. And I think that the comedian would...
All right, I'm not going to argue with you. I don't watch their shows, but some do. They have big audiences. And I suppose they have to pretend that they're nice guys and that they're Yankee fans and eat hot dogs and love babies.
Yeah, well,
so I understand how it works, which is why I'm not a politician. I'm not a baseball fan. I don't eat hot dogs and I don't kiss babies. So therefore, that's the story. 1-800-449-8255. Here are the headlines on michaelsavage.com. On the right side, Dictator Chavez, that's your friend, Jimmy Carter's good friend. The dictator Chavez has called Catholic leaders in his country immoral for standing against this maniac's powers. You must read the story. You will not believe it. The Catholic Church has stood up to him because he is taking over more and more power, more and more control of the country, step by step, day by day, more and more showing himself to be the dangerous left-wing maniac dictator that he is. And only the Catholic Church stood up to him. He's called them immoral for standing up to him. That's the man that Jimmy Carter fundamentally put in power. You know, Jimmy Carter has done a lot of damage in this world of ours. He overthrew the Shah. He brought Khomeini back from Paris. He triggered the virulence of radical Islam, and now he's triggering communism in Latin America. Thank you, Jimmy. Thank you, Jimmy. You don't fool me for one second. Left top. Pelosi triggers Turk-Kurd war, opens up new front for U.S. troops. Marines face trials in Haditha deaths. Underneath it is a very important story from the Opinion Journal, what happened at Haditha, the massacre that wasn't, and its political exploitation. It's an important story. You must print it if you're going to give money or you're not sure whether to give money. Read it, and you'll see that this, it's all a fake. TB rules cited as faulty and limited. The government is claiming that a Mexican businessman infected with a highly contagious form of TB poses no serious public health threat and posed no such threat when he flew on domestic flights. It turns out that they're lying to you. I'm just shocked that a U.S. governmental agency would lie to you. Just shocked. Here's another little story for those of you China watchers. Communist China has bought a 6% stake in U.S. investment bank Bear Stearns. Bear Stearns Co.'s and CITC Securities Company today agreed to invest $1 billion in each other. In other words, the communist Chinese have bought a 6% stake in a U.S. investment bank, We are losing the country brick by brick, foundation by foundation, and the auctioneer in chief is George W. Bush. How much do I hear? 21, 22.
Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
You know, last Friday there was a news story that didn't get the attention it really deserved. The Journal of the American Medical Association published a report that stated, quote, children as young as three are being given a powerful drug such as Ritalin to treat their ADHD, even though it's not licensed for use among small children, and nobody's been checking to see how safe the drug is in this age group. Early studies suggest that around a third of small children given Ritalin or another ADHD drug have such a bad reaction that they have to stop treatment. Reactions have included sleeplessness, irritability, repetitive behavior or thoughts, appetite loss. The drugs also affect the child's growth. Children on an ADHD drug are around 20% shorter and 55% lighter for their age. Can you believe this? Now, I've been warning America about the dangers of ADHD treatments, the quackery of pediatricians, for over 20 years. If we don't begin to pay attention now, we will see an entire generation of medicated zombies. You know, the Soviets used mind control to control dissent. Now the socialist left, the drug companies, the insurance companies, and the politicians catering to them are trying to control your child's minds. Soon they will be adults with no brains, no ability to reason. Leftist socialist zombies. It's unbelievable. Let's go to the callers. Debbie, KNEW, San Francisco, go ahead, please.
Yes, sir. How do you do? Thank you for taking my call. Dr. Savage, I do suffer from psychological and psychiatric illness, and I denied it for many, many years, having heard stories of my grandmother in New York, who at a mummer's parade had just been released from a psychiatric hospital and was a little too happy, so was returned by Black Wagon to suffer another round of electroshock therapy. So growing up, when I myself found myself to suffer from similar symptomologies, refused to go get help. And I'll tell you, I do believe that humans, and I find it interesting that rather than recognizing that we do produce very...
All right, so but what is your main point? Of course there's mental illness. There's always been, you know, marginally crazy people and overtly crazy people. We know that. So what is it that we're disagreeing on?
Well, I think it's not subjective, sir. I think that there is a scientific way of producing diagnoses by way of examining common symptomologies and behavior. And
it's not that precise. That's the point, and that's where the rub lies. The doctors would have you believe that it's easy to diagnose and definitively diagnose that mental illness, and I disagree entirely. It's not that easy. Now, I've seen brain scan studies. Don't get me wrong. I've seen the different colorations in schizophrenics and others, but we have no fundamental argument here. In other words, I know there are people who are unstable. I know there are people who are totally crazy, and I know people who are rock steady and never suffer any such orientation. So where the argument arises is, can we control some of these proclivities through means other than medication is the only argument that I think we're having.
Well, I definitely think it can be controlled through medication. The disappointment...
No, you didn't hear me. You see, you went right over what I said. I said, can some of these symptoms or conditions be controlled with means other than medication?
I think it depends to what extent an individual is suffering. In my case, the answer is no. I spent many, many years seeking out. I went to Marin County. I saw the best nutritional therapist, and I wish I could say their names on air.
Did you try mega doses? I'm going to pick one thing out of the air. Did you try massive doses of niacin?
Sir, I tried niacin until my skin was so red. I look like
I'm only asking because I want to know how far you went along with nutritional therapies. Of course, they're not going to work in all cases. But you did try Dr. Hoffer's niacin therapy.
I had more niacin in my blood. I went to Oregon. I went to L.A. I had neurosurgery for a very bizarre,
They looked at your iron levels. They looked at your folic acid levels, correct?
Everything. I had more blood panels drawn from me.
You went that route. The route didn't help you, and now you're on major anti-psychiatric drugs, and you feel better, correct?
I absolutely feel better, and I've been on
No one's arguing with that. But I'm saying don't put children on Ritalin the minute they show signs of being a boy.
I absolutely agree with that as well.
All right, so there's no argument. You'll get me crazy if I keep talking to you another three minutes. Three more minutes, I'll need to reach for a pill. 1-800-449-8255. You can get me. You can go crazy from it. I once went and visited a holy man, a religious teacher. He was a former pugilist, a boxer, who then went into religion and became a religious guy, but he still maintained the man of the street. He knew reality. In other words, he didn't come from like an effete background. I was suffering at the time through various things that were going on in my life, mainly societal social engineering that made me feel like a failure because I was not granted what I had earned because they wanted to put people with less qualifications and of other races and of other sexual orientations. Total morons, by the way, given jobs, which is why the university has fundamentally collapsed in America in many departments, certainly not in all. And I was feeling it. I had two young children. I didn't know what was wrong. I killed myself. I did great work. I published my dissertation at Harvard, at a Harvard University journal. I mean, it was pretty good stuff that I did. And they hired whack job moron feminist tree huggers or people from countries of origin other than the United States of America to make them feel good and to look good on the brochures. So I go to see this holy man, and he says to me, what is exactly your problem? And I explain it to him. And he says to me, you know, we have a saying which says that if you take a stick and you put it into a dog, he used the word, I can't say it, let's say dog waste, I'll put it that way on the show. And he says, no matter which way you turn the stick, it's still dog waste. And he said, now, if you don't mind, I have to excuse myself right now. I got very mad at him. I was fuming because I wanted some mystical experience in this holy man's office. He told me, if you take a stick and you put it in, you know what, and no matter how you move the stick around, it's still you know what. What he was telling me is stop moving the stick around and you know what. And he was right. See, so there are many ways to cure problems. They're not all medicatable. Not everything needs medication. Sometimes common sense works. That's what I'm trying to tell you, is that there's an epidemic of loss of common sense. An epidemic of loss of common sense. We have a nation of ninnies. Everyone walks around, medication. I want my medication. I want my crutch. I want my drug. I want my medication. I want Uncle Sam to pay for my medication. I'm sickly. I want my drug. Well, maybe you need your drug and maybe you don't. Maybe you're just a weak individual who refuses to take control of your own life. You know, you have diabetes and you're still eating Krispy Kreme. I wouldn't give you medication. I'd make you pay for your medication if you refuse to modify your diet. And you want me to pay for your diabetic treatment, for your treatment for diabetes, and so forth and so on. If you're not willing to help yourself, why should I help you? That's why our taxes are out of control in this country. But more than that, psychiatry is often used as mind control, societal control in our country. And I want to make a very big political point now, because we're moving very, very close to the ex-Soviet Union, where psychiatrists were used to diagnose people who were antisocial or anti-political. They were then taken away by the secret police, medicated into submission, and thrown into re-education camps. If you think we're not moving in that direction, my friend, you are mistaken. Some well-meaning psychiatrists are this far away from recommending that political dissidents in this country not be medicated. Trust me on this. I'm sure it's being discussed. That anyone who suffers this phobia or that phobia can only be treated with major pharmaceuticals. And I can guarantee you, as I sit here, that it's going to come from the homosexual radical community, that Christians who believe in the word of God are psychiatrically impaired by definition, and they should be medicated. and they should be reeducated. That is the only way to cure them of their God, of their God madness. I can guarantee you it's being whispered in psychiatric halls. So don't tell me I don't see what's coming in this country unless you stand up to this juggernaut of the medico-legal profession, or I shall say the medico-pharmaceutical legal profession, because they're all intimately involved. Now, that's not to throw away all of medicine. That would be foolish. And I've never said that. That would be a ridiculous thing to say. I'm talking about integrative medicine, where all of these modalities are work together. You don't jump to one or the other. That would be like saying, oh, let's never use drugs and let's only use dietetics. That's absurd in most cases. So don't think that I'm a zealot in one area. But I don't want to be led around by the nose and to believe that there are no effects upon mind and body other than those that can be cured by drugs. The drug establishment is out of control in its power over the mind of the people. Take a look at the Viagra ads. I turned on Fox, CNN, MSNBC. I flipped around at 15 minutes after the hour all day. All I saw was a white-haired man dancing a woman around on a floor with a big smile as they left to the hotel room and said, Viagra, Viagra, Viagra. Every channel at 15 after the hour. Every man needs Viagra over the age of 40, according to the advertisements. Could it be that the man is impotent? Excuse me, erectile dysfunctional because he really doesn't want to have sex because he's not in heat? We are the only animal on earth who is deluded by our societal images and pressures into thinking that we should be, wow, I'm raring to go 365 days a year. I can spring up like a 15-year-old. I'm a potent man. There's no animal on earth that is potent 365 days a year. We're the only animal who's been deluded into thinking we should be. So now we medicate the fact that we're not attracted to the woman. We're out of sync with the desire. Or we shouldn't be having sex at all right now. Why must a man have sex 365 days a year? Where have you read an animal that has sex 365 days a year? It's unheard of. So in a sense, we are a totally insane society being led around by our nose. I'll be right back. Place, and I don't want to be mean to them, a mock English pub by the sea in Northern California in my area. I will not give it a name. They transported an English pub from England to the sea, and I go there once a year. Now, let me tell you what happened. It ends with food poisoning. It ends on almost on the order of a Thailand-level food poisoning for Mrs. S., not for me. She ate crab cakes. I was lucky. I didn't eat the crab cakes because I don't eat them because they're too rich for me. So it took 1 hour from the time we sat down to get served food. And they knew who I was. They said, oh, we'll treat you well. We'll give you a window table. Everything was nice. 1 hour from the time I sat down till I got a piece of food. Now, I didn't complain because the ambience was nice and I kept drinking beer. I used it as an excuse anyway. I knew I was going to tie one on. I figured, okay, it's an excuse. Yeah, I'm going to go to an English pub for food. Right, sure. Give me those kidneys. Let me have the – and they didn't even have English – see, the funny thing is I would have had the kidneys if they had them. They didn't even have real English food. I said, don't you have kidneys in here? The English eat kidneys. I figured whatever was good for King Edward was pretty good for me. Once – I know they're very rich in cholesterol, so I don't eat them. Being an expert in nutrition, I know what not to eat, unfortunately. That's my downfall and my upfall. But once in a while, it's nice to have food that smells of urine. It reminds you of raising children all over again. How English eat that, I don't know. It's stuffed in a dough, but it's really not – they don't have it. So to make a long story short, 1 hour. I got there like 8:30. The food came at 9:31, and I kept looking, and I couldn't believe this. Give me another order of bread. Give me another beer. I was like bread and beer. I thought I was on some kind of ritualistic diet. And you know when things are not going well is when you get up for air breaks and you're going outside like every 10 minutes – every 10 minutes I was going out. What great air, I'm saying to myself. Oh, I'm glad I'm out here. What beautiful air. Sea air. I'm starving to death. I'm getting a double migraine. Not only the right side, the left side, the eyes are crossed because it was already past the point of wanting to eat. They make you wait so long. I'm an instant guy. I want to eat. I'm from New York. They don't know from service, by the way. I will tell you this. This is an absolute fact of reality. All you New Yorkers listening to me, there's one thing that's true. There's no such thing as service outside of New York. An hour and 2 minutes later, the food comes. So Mrs. Savage ordered beef Wellington. What's beef Wellington? I don't even know what it was. The Duke of Wellington had nothing to do. He tore the man with a dough. She says, well done, though. It comes out uncooked. The beef is uncooked. Send back the beef. Now, I got to go on with this for a minute because I know this has happened to you. If you go in a restaurant, you order something. That day we had another problem for lunch. That's even another story. Some eco-sensitive people opened a little fish place in Sausalito. Then they sheeshed it up with the – it's like a hippie commune. Okay, you ready for this one? They serve the fish uncooked in the middle. After I told them, cook it all the way through. I'm not in the Jap. Don't give me sushi. You know, who came up with this crap that fish shouldn't be cooked? There's worms in fish, you idiots. You don't eat fish uncooked unless you're a squid and the thing died and fell to the bottom of the bay, or you're a catfish. Who eats raw fish like that? Well, okay, in sushi, I give you that. So anyway, I sent that back. That was during the day. Now, here's the trick I wanted to teach you as a man who knows restaurants ins and outs. You wait 30 minutes for the fish sandwich. It comes. It comes with a plate, let's say salad or French fries. They finally give you the plate 20 minutes later, and there's something wrong with the sandwich part of it. They say, okay, I'll cook it again. Don't give them the plate. Whatever you do, cut their hand off. You can't have the plate. Give me another plate. Then you take the part that's not cooked and put it on a plate and say, now cook it. So you got something to eat. Because they like to punish you, take the whole dish away. The minute you complain, you're busted. All right, I'll fix it. Boom. The whole dish gets taken away. Then you got to keep your eye on the food you sent back. Because watch out in San Francisco. Oh, yeah. Because if you're not sensitive to the body sores here, you know, you don't know what's going to wind up in your tuna. Let me tell you something. What you put in your mouth is about as profound as anything you're going to do in your life, because it can lead to food poisoning. It can lead to death. Let me put it to you that way. Don't think I'm just blowing this up for no reason. I'm trying to protect you. It took the schmuck 10 minutes longer to recook the fish, the idiot. They all discussed it, by the way. Oh, look at those two. They sent back the fish. I cooked it. And they're discussing it, and I'm fuming already. Cook the fish, cook the fish, cook the fish, schmuck, cook the fish. The idiot now, the cook comes back, not the waitress, and he says, normally we cook our tuna sashimi with and sent. I said, hey, look, Johnson, I said, well done. I'm not in a Japanese restaurant, okay? Oh, excuse me, the waitress had it wrong. I said, yes, she had it wrong, okay? Tell her to lighten up on the laughing gas back there.
San Francisco.
Insight magazine is going to report later this week that there's a debate within the Bush administration. You know what the debate is? Should the U.S. assassinate the so-called president of Syria to further isolate Iran? Jeff Kuhner is here to give the Savage Nation an exclusive report on this assassination discussion.
Essentially, Michael, what administration sources have told us at InsightMag.com is that the Bush National Security Team, is engaged in a very intense, bitter debate over what to do with Iran and also what to do with Syria. It is quite clear that Dick Cheney's people are winning out in the argument about the need to prevent Iran from getting a nuclear bomb, even if it means an intense, comprehensive bombing campaign. They believe that in the end, in about maybe 12 months from now, just right after the presidential election, the United States will have no choice but to launch massive military strikes to take out Iran's nuclear bunkers. However, what some are saying close to Cheney, the vice president is leading this, but it's also, to be fair, people like Karl Rove and other people close to Bush, that the way to really inhibit and curtail and damage Iran is to go for Syria. Syria has become Iran's major client state in the Middle East. It is harboring Hezbollah. It is supporting Hezbollah. It is seeking to undermine Lebanon. Syria has been, in many ways, aiding and abetting the insurgency in Iraq. In fact, Michael, literally a former Marine, has told us at Insight, this is somebody whose job it is to go into Iraq and dismantle improvised explosive devices, IEDs, what that Marine has told Insight is that for every one IED that is detonated in Iraq, 500 have been captured by U.S. troops or coalition forces and prevented from being detonated. That means there is an avalanche. There is an ocean of IEDs flooding into Iraq, and they're coming from Iran, and they're coming from Syria. And so what the Cheney administration is now, what the Cheney people in the Bush administration have been saying is, Syria, under its leadership of Bashar Assad, has declared war on the United States.
You got to be kidding me.
It is in bed with our with our most dangerous enemy, Iran. They are subverting regimes across the Middle East. They are empowering Hamas. They are empowering Hezbollah. They are assaulting the Democrats in Lebanon. They want to wipe Israel off the map. And in the end, they are trying to enable Iran to become the hegemonic power in the Middle East and to help Iran, most importantly, get a nuclear bomb, which will lead to a nuclear holocaust and a showdown, first with Israel and then eventually with us. And so what Cheney's people have been saying is we need to find a way to overthrow the regime of Syrian strongman Bashar Assad. And so what Cheney is now urging Bush to do is to empower elements within the Assad family to launch a military coup and overthrow Bashar. And the person that they're most looking to right now is Bashar Assad's uncle, an individual by the name of Rifat Assad. Rifat is a brother of Bashar's father, the brutal dictator of Syria, Hafez Assad, who died in the 1990s. And then that paved the way for his son Bashar to come into power. Rifat is a brutal man. There's no getting around that. He was very close with Hafez Assad in the 1970s and the 1980s. In particular, Michael, we have found out that Rifat Assad led a massacre, a mass slaughter of 8,000 of opponents of Syria's regime in a town in Hama in Syria. He really helped. He was a strong man who helped to consolidate Hafez Assad's power over Syria. The problem, however, is that Rifat Assad eventually was pushed into exile, and he is now living in Spain. And the reason why he was pushed into exile is that he may be brutal, but he in many ways is a pro-American dictator. He is somebody who believes that in the end, Syria's long-term interests lies in some kind of de facto alliance with the United States, and certainly to break and disengage its alliance with Iran. Rifat is convinced that Syria's alliance with Iran will lead to the Assad family's downfall in Syria. And so what Cheney and other of his close associates have been urging Bush is to reach out to Rifat, use his influence in the Assad family, and spearhead a military coup that will to overthrow Bashar Assad from power and lead to a pro-American dictatorship in Syria. This is being vigorously opposed, strenuously opposed, by both Secretary of State Condoleezza Rice and Undersecretary of State Karen Hughes. They are urging the president not to do this for the simple reason that the entire basis of the Bush foreign policy in the Middle East, whether you agree or disagree with it, has been to promote democracy and human rights. And they believe that by supporting a naked mass murderer like Rifat in a power struggle with Bashar Assad, although this may help the United States in the short term, that in the long term it will expose us as hypocrites to all the Democrats in the Middle East, and it will undermine every vestige of American credibility.
Where is this leading us?
Essentially, Michael, the thinking behind the Cheney line of argument is this. Syria is Mussolini's Italy to Iran's Nazi Germany. In other words, it's a very pivotal ally of Iran. It's a pivotal enabler of Tehran's ambition to spread Islamofascism across the Middle East. And so the thinking is, if you can smash Syria, if you can pull it away from Iran's orbit, you will cripple its ability to control Hezbollah, you will cripple its ability to flex its muscles in the Palestinian territories, you will really inhibit their ability to influence the region, to project their power, and Michael, most importantly, Iran will be literally eviscerated in its ability to wage war against American forces in Iraq. The border between Iraq and Syria is literally, it is porous. Terrorists are pouring in day by day. Weapons are pouring in day by day. And, Michael, this to me is the $1,000, to me the $1 million question. Syria was the point where a lot of Saddam Hussein's weapons of mass destruction were spearheaded out of Iraq in the build-up to the war. We know this for a fact. We have satellite photos, detailed satellite photos, showing truck convoy after truck convoy in which all kinds of equipment and material was being sent from Iraq into Syria. And this has now been housed in Syria, and a lot of it is now flooded onto the international market and also been given into the hands of Hezbollah, who want to use it not only against Israel, but, God forbid, against American civilians here in the United States. Overthrowing Bashar Assad will literally unveil the entire WMD superstructure, the infrastructure that has been developing in Syria over the last 4 to 5 years, with the help first from Saddam Hussein and now from Iran. The problem, however, is Syria is Mussolini's Italy, if you use the 1930s analogy. It's an important player, but it's not the central player. The central player is Iran. And in the end, weakening Syria, hurting Syria, will damage Iran, but it will not finish off Iran. And the mullahs, from everything that we're being told, from intelligence sources in Iran and from Israeli intelligence sources, is they are hell-bent on getting a nuclear weapon. They believe it is their key to international prestige and international power. And more importantly, Michael, they are convinced that this is their fulfillment as an Islamic revolutionary state, that it is their mission to bring about an apocalypse, a world Muslim empire, and to unleash a final confrontation with the United States.
Oh, my God.
They truly believe, President Mahmoud Ahmadinejad of Iran truly believes, as Hitler truly believed, that destiny is on his side, that he has been given a divine mission to confront the evil satanic West, and that he will win ultimately in some showdown. And so anything that we can do to weaken this regime, I'm totally in favor for. Now, Michael, what I would say, where I would disagree with Cheney's people very strenuously, is I do think on this one issue, Rice and Hughes, I think, have a point. If we do back a thug, a mass-murdering thug, like Rifat Assad, it will damage American credibility. And what I would do instead is support the growing dissident democratic movement within Syria. Assad's regime is deeply unpopular. It is hated by most young people. It is seen as corrupt. It is seen as inept. Many Syrians are very proud of their country's national heritage and proud of its history. They deplore the fact that they have become a subservient sycophant of Tehran, a vassal state that literally bows to the whims of the mullahs in Iran. Many of them would like to see their country free themselves from the grip of the Iranians and stand in their own 2 feet. I would support the burgeoning democratic movement in Syria and push to topple Assad from within, just as I would push the very same policy prescriptions for Iran. I believe that our biggest asset in Iran is the dissident groups, women's groups, labor groups, student groups, who are sickened by the theocrats in Iran, who have driven their country into the ground, and if they have their way, into an absolute disastrous war. Because, Michael, I'll tell you this. You know, we may pay very heavy casualties. If Iran does get a nuclear bomb, there will be nuclear clouds over Tel Aviv and Jerusalem. There may even be a dirty bomb in New York or Washington. We could suffer like we have never suffered before. But Iran will be wiped off the face of the earth. There will be no Iranian left in some kind of a nuclear showdown with the United States. And many Iranians realize that. And so if we can tap into that, to that nascent, burgeoning democratic movement, we could do in Iran and Syria what the great Ronald Reagan did behind the Iron Curtain during the 1980s in Poland, in Ukraine, and in the Baltic states.
Jeff, thanks for that update.
Michael, thanks very much.
Savage.
Four
former Prime Minister of Pakistan, Benazir Bhutto, returned to Pakistan after an eight-year self-imposed exile last week. Her convoy was attacked by suicide bombers. She was uninjured, but the death toll from those bombings has now risen to 140, over 500 wounded. 500 wounded, 140 dead. I touch on this as a reminder of the vile enemy we're combating. They have taken the selfish act of suicide to extremes you can't even imagine. The selfishness we see every day in America is fueling our enemies, with the parents drugging their children, the media sycophantic about our precious celebrities, our insatiable appetite for self-destruction, whether it be by overeating, over-medicating, or over-litigating, is destroying us. Selfishness is the enemy. Let me explain something, and I'm going to try and do it now in a non-comedic fashion, or a non-angry fashion, a non-sarcastic fashion, a non-sardonic fashion, a non-ridiculing fashion. You want to talk about selfish? I've been there, and I haven't done that. I've gone through the suicide phase a few times in my life, primarily as a result of what liberalism almost did to me and my family. They almost destroyed me, but not quite. I rose from the ashes like a phoenix. But what I found down in those ashes of depression, and I'm talking 20 years ago, I'll level with you right now, were many, 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 many things. There was a lot of ferment in my life at the time. I got very deeply into religion at that time, and what I discovered was the greatest sin a man can commit is suicide. Did you know that? Suicide is a greater crime than homicide because you're killing God's property. It's not your property. You don't own you, Johnson. You're owned by God. Now, the day you learn that, not only do you gain an awful lot, but you lose an awful lot. You know what you lose? You lose the burden of thinking that you're so important. You lose the burden of thinking that everything in the world depends upon how you feel, or whether you made a good do-do that day. You find out that you're just a mote in the mire like everybody else. Ashes to ashes, dust to dust. In many ways, we're all just ashes and ashes and dust to dust. But in some ways, some of us struggle to overcome that and to create something of meaning while we are alive. But the bottom line here is, suicide is the worst crime you can commit. But put aside the religious connotation of suicide. Any man who is married who commits suicide is the biggest coward on the planet in terms of what he's going to do to his wife. Any man who is married and has children is an even bigger coward in terms of the curse he puts upon the third generation of his own family by committing suicide. That's my reaction to it. That's why I don't have any sympathy for suicides. You hear me? You hear that? Never talked about it before. Paul, San Diego, good challenge. Go ahead, please.
Yeah, I was wondering what you felt about this. Socrates basically committed suicide by drinking hemlock when he was...
Good point. Well, first of all, Greeks, as you well know, the Greeks of those days are somewhat irrelevant in some ways today.
But sometimes suicide's your only choice, isn't it?
Not my choice. Maybe it's yours.
But Socrates' choice.
Well, are you suggesting you would like to commit suicide and you're asking me for dispensation?
No, I'm just saying, no, the topic is suicide, and I'm just saying that devil's advocate, Socrates committed suicide in a way because he could have escaped, and he chose to drink hemlock because the sun was on the hill. And I just wanted to see what you thought of that.
Well, okay, I'll give you another example. Ernst Rommel, the Desert Fox, the Nazi general, okay, was a great German general from the point of view of Germany. But Ernst Rommel was part of the plot to kill Hitler towards the end of the war. You know that, right?
All right.
He was. And he was revered by the German military and by Hitler himself. But once he was found to be part of the plot to kill Hitler, he was called back to Berlin, and he was given a choice. The choice was to go on trial and be executed and have all of his property would have been seized by the Nazi government, or to commit suicide. He chose to commit suicide, but that's a little different in the sense that someone was pulling the trigger for him. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, can I have a theory? Can I base
it? Well, no, wait, hold on. Don't jump over that. There are exceptions to every rule, as we well know. I'm talking about a man who does have the choice of free will to commit suicide. Ernst Rommel had no free will any more than Socrates had free will. Socrates was given a choice. Either you commit suicide by taking the hemlock, or we'll seize all of your property, etc. So in other words, it wasn't just a spontaneous desire to kill himself because he was depressed.
Do you find it kind of kind of like parallel the story of Socrates and his apostles and, let's say, some other type of religion? I mean, I find it kind of uncanny the way in which he had these apostles around him and the wisdom in which he brought, you know, and then here he is, he has to kill himself in order, like you said, to protect himself from these tyrants and from taking everything that he had already, you know. It's, I don't know. Am I wrong, or?
What are you saying? You're putting him in the context of who? Are you saying he's like who? Like the story of Christianity?
A Platonist, like a Platonist. I don't want to use Christianity because everybody uses that same person, but like Platonism, or you know what I mean? Like Plato.
Platonism? You mean Plato, correct? You're talking about Plato?
Yeah.
No, I don't know. I think we're getting off the topic here. Would you commit suicide if you had free will?
Yes.
You would?
I believe in free will. I wouldn't kill myself.
I'm saying, but do you have a family?
Huh?
Do you have a family?
Yes, sir.
Children or just like mother, father, brother, sisters?
I'm a 40-year-old grandfather.
You have a 40-year-old grandfather or you are a 40-year-old grandfather? You are a 40-year-old grandfather?
Yes.
All right. Well, I want to tell you something. I don't know if you're really serious about being depressed or you really think. Just think about the effect it would have upon your grandchildren. They would carry around in their head. Every child thinks about their father or their mother. The usual topic is your mother or father still alive, yes or no, right? You do that. Don't you do that with people when you meet them?
No.
I'm talking to myself already. I'm talking to a complete wallpaper here, a guy who belongs in a rubber wallpaper. I mean, this guy should be wrapped in rubber wallpaper. What am I doing here? Where do I have to go? I really don't want to talk about suicide unless you want to talk about a nation's suicide. The suicide of a nation, as exemplified by our nation. All right. We have an entirely lost generation in America. Far more of a lost generation than was Hemingway's lost generation. They were just lost to the social order, but they were not deviants and they were not seditious. They were lost in the sense that they were adrift, the 20s generation, the F. Scott Fitzgeralds, the Hemingways and the others of that time when they were called the lost generation. What do you mean they were post-World War I lost? What they meant lost was so different than what I mean by the lost generation. This generation is lost completely. There may be no hope for them. And I feel so bad for these children who don't even understand what's at stake. They don't even understand that we've been attacked. They don't even understand that we have real enemies outside and inside this country. They don't understand that we could lose it all in our lifetime. They don't even understand what's at stake. And they go for the easy, feel-good solution. They don't understand what's really, really at stake here.
Savage.